Good evening and welcome to a featured author special on the Artist First Radio Network. Tonight, my second guest is Terry Sprouse, author of three books, Fix 'Em Up, Rent 'Em Out, Never Sell Your House, and Carve Out Your Niche, How to Live Your Passion, Write Your Book, and Help Others Change Their World. The last book will be the main focus of this interview, and it's my pleasure to introduce you to Terry Sprouse. How are you today, Terry?
Very good, Richie. Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, thanks for joining us. I just checked out your website, and I want to let all our listeners know that we fixed the link off of our homepage. It probably didn't work if you tried to check it out already, but refresh your browsers and click on carveoutyourniche.com and follow that link there to Terry's blog page, and you can see there some information about Terry. Can you tell us a little bit about this blog that is on your website?
Yes, it is, as you mentioned, it's called Carve Out Your Niche, the same title as my book. And so I use it as a way to kind of expand on what I write in my book about how to live your passion, how to write your book, and how to help others to change their world. So I write generally an article every day or two about some inspiring incident that occurred to me or that I came across in my life, or else something related to book writing or book promotion, and just a great little resource, I think, for people that are interested in writing their own book.
Well, you must be a very busy person to be able to keep up with all of that blogging.
It takes some effort. The hardest part, like they say in the book, The War of Art, the hardest part is just sitting down to write.
Mm-hmm.
Once you're down there, it's easy.
And then it just comes out, huh?
Yes.
You, the newest book is Carve Out Your Niche, How to Live Your Passion. Can you tell us everything you can about this book and why we should buy it?
Well, I initially wrote this book. I wrote two previous books. And in the process of promoting those and giving presentations to groups and organizations, invariably, some people would be interested in learning about, you know, real estate investing, which is what those two books were about, buying fixer-upper houses and turning them into rental properties.
Mm-hmm.
But a large segment of people, maybe 50%, would also be interested in how I went about writing and self-publishing and promoting my book. So I had two sort of separate and equal groups that had two different reasons for listening to my presentations. And invariably, there was people in the second group that were interested in how to write and self-publish, who had an idea for a book, who had a desire to write a book, but they didn't really know how to go through the process of self-publishing and promoting and getting it out there to the world. So that kind of initially gave me the idea to write this book on the process of actually discovering what your passion is, and then doing your passion, writing about it in a book to share your experiences with others, and finally giving presentations and connecting with people on the internet and through the radio and TV, so that your message and the information you have about how other people can do what you did reaches them. So essentially, Richie, there's three stages to carving out your niche, as I describe it in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Number one is the inspiration. And this is where you look inside yourself to find that burning desire and strength to establish your niche, which is, you know, essentially your mission in life, or you're listening to that small voice inside you to figure out what you really should be doing with your life. And maybe it's not working an 8-to-5 job. Maybe that doesn't really push all your buttons, or, you know, satisfy all your needs in a job. You know, perhaps you need more of a challenge. So that's step one, finding inspiration or your mission. And as part of that, then once you get the inspiration, you do the thing that you're inspired to do. For my case, it turned out to be one inspiration was to start this business, buying fixer-upper houses and turning them into rental properties. So I did that for several years, and then in 2007 I wrote the book, Fix 'Em Up, Print 'Em Out. And that's the second stage in creating your niches to write your book. And this is where you share the knowledge you gained with others so that they can follow your path. You know, Mark Twain said that great people make other people feel that they can be great too. Mm. So our goal in writing our books, in my case anyway, and these I focus on how-to books, is to show people how to make their lives better by, you know, improving their circumstance and learning how to do business type of business things that I do. And then the third step is the promotion of your message. And this is where you reach out and share your book and your message through an assortment of, you know, techniques, including videos, radio interviews, and the internet, and reach out and connect with people who are interested in hearing your message.
And that all sounds awesome, but what do you think are the best methods for doing that?
Well, I think that, I mean, first you have to connect with your, you know, your inner self, I believe. And Carl Jung, the father of psychoanalysis, said that when each person is a 2-million-year-old man, and this 2-million-year-old man has the collected wisdom of the entire human race, and this man is the unconscious. So we have two levels of consciousness. The conscious is when we're thinking, doing our daily activities, planning. The unconscious, according to Carl Jung, we reach either through our dreams or through intuition. And I think we have to make a conscious effort to reach this 2-million-year-old man, or other people call it the spirit or a cosmic consciousness. We have to connect with this thing, you know, this 2-million-year-old man that is, you know, has wisdom to share with us and find out what we should be doing with our lives. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned, you know, maybe people are dissatisfied with their present job, or maybe they've been laid off from a job. And this could be an opportunity to change the direction of their lives and a chance to get on a path where they can determine their own fate. You know, life could be trying to teach them a lesson. So that's the first step in finding your inspiration and then following it, as I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that when I think at some point we get like flashes of inspiration, and oftentimes we'll say, wow, yeah, you know, I should be doing that. But we don't, it fades again, you know, we don't grab it when it's there. And in my case, I carry a book, a notebook with me when I go to bed. I put it right beside my bed.
Mm.
And oftentimes when I wake up in the night, I'm kind of half dreamy, half asleep, half awake, I'll get some flashes of inspiration, and I'll turn the light on and start writing them down, you know, so I don't let them get away. And the key is to act quickly and to do what you're inspired to do before, you know, like I said, slips away. So that's one technique I use. Another way I find I get those inspiration and small voices by going on walks in the early mornings and in evenings, and just relaxing, let my mind open up, take my dog Blackie with me, my black lab, and we walk, and I have a little notebook with me then too, and when I get inspiration, I'll jot it down so I won't forget it.
I think that's a great idea. You always are able to capture those fleeting moments then and take them and make them reality.
Precisely.
And I think for a lot of people, that's probably the hardest thing to do, maybe, is just to figure out what their passion is.
I think that's true because of our society, you know, everything, you know, militates against us looking inside of ourselves, or either on the television or iPads, you know, radio.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of distractions in this life we have, and not to mention if you're married and have children, those are good distractions, but distractions nonetheless. So it takes an effort to really decide that, yeah, I'm going to set aside a time to you know, go walking or get up really early in the morning to read some inspiring books and try to open up my mind to what my path should be. It takes an effort, I think.
Let's assume that people have got a good idea of what they want to do and what they want to write about. The next step would be writing the book itself. What kind of advice would you give for actually writing the book?
Well, I would suggest how I did my first one is I did, because I had two small children and a wife, I would get up about 2 or 3 in the morning and I'd pound out my book for 2 or 3 hours and then catch another hour of sleep before going back to work. But on my most recent book, I didn't do it that way. Instead, I took a slightly different approach in that I didn't get up really early. I just tried to work it in throughout the day. And what I do is I'll lay out make an outline of what I think the chapter head should be. But first, of course, I have to have an idea what the book is. And, you know, there's a famous children's author, R.L. Stein, who writes the Goosebumps books, which my boys both used to read. And he said he would never write a book until he had the title in mind, what he wanted the title to be. And I'm kind of that way, too. I have to have a very pretty clear idea of, you know, what the final product is going to be. Otherwise, you're all over the map. You know, you can't really focus that much. So I have a pretty clear idea where the final title will be. It can still change, and then based on that, I'll make an outline of the chapters. And what I do too now is I carry a notebook with me, like a 100-page spiral notebook where you can tear pages out. And when I get ideas, I jot them down throughout the day. If I'm, for example, at lunch and get an idea, hear a comment, an interesting turn of phrase, or if I hear a funny story or joke, jot that down. Anything that might have any potential to go into my book in some form, I'll write it down. And I take a bigger notebook with me most of the time, like 8.5 by 11, or if I'm in a position where I have to bring a smaller one, I have one that fits in my pocket too. But I've always got a notebook with me to jot down any fresh ideas that I might get. And eventually I transfer these ideas onto the computer, little by little.
Mm-hmm. I could see it being rather tedious to write a whole book by hand.
Well, it's mostly done on the computer.
Yeah.
After I get, along with a certain amount of text, you know, then everything shifts over the computer. Although I still kept creating my notebooks and write ideas down and transfer them onto the computer from time to time.
A lot of times I hear that during the writing process, first you just let every idea possible come to you and don't try to edit from the first step. Wait until it all comes out and then edit.
Yeah, I think that's good advice.
Because I think a lot of times if you're editing kind of at the same time you're writing, you're actually sort of working against the creative flow.
That's true. That's why I carry the notebook. You know, then when I get inspirations, I don't edit those at all. I just immediately write them down. And then later on in the process, after I kind of have all my ideas I think I'm going to get, but even then, you know, you think you've got the book done, and as you're editing, sometimes another good idea pops into your mind, and you have to add that in.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've always got to be open to massaging the book at any stage of the process.
So after you've written the book, you go on to promoting, which is also a big job.
One more step, Richie.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, ahead. In my case anyway, maybe not everybody.
Sure.
In my case, then I self-publish my book. So I do the layout, I do the editing, and I'm the publisher, too.
Right.
So that takes a little more time, and it saves money, though, but it's a great, in my opinion, that's the best way to go. If you can learn all the aspects of the book, you know, not just writing, not just publishing, but also not just promoting, but also learning how to self-publish, and you can have all the strings in your hand. You know, you can crank out a book anytime you want to without having to rely on other people or other companies like publishers to do it for you. So yes, that's, and you know, the reason I recommend that people self-publish, really there's three reasons. One, it's fairly easy to produce your own book using Microsoft Word, and printing companies like lightningsource.com, which many self-publishers use as the printer, because they will take your book and they have a connection with Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble, all of the internet bookstores, and so they have this symbiotic relationship where they supply books to the bookstores, and then they collect the money for you and deposit into your bank account for you. So it simplifies the life of a self-publisher.
Wonderful. What was the name of the website again?
It's called lightningsource.com.
And is that the number one place you would recommend to try and self-publish?
Far and away. Because many people get kind of misled and when they think they're self-publishing, where companies will actually, the company will be the publisher and charge you, you know, a hefty amount to be the self-publisher at a percentage of the cost, because they put their name on there as the publisher, and they're the company that's publishing, not you. Mm. But with Lightning Source, you know, they're just the printer, not the publisher. You get the residuals as publisher, not some other company.
And do they have tools on there that help you lay the book out?
Well, no. You just download it as a PDF onto their site, and then they print it off of that. I recommend, there's a book, several useful books about how to lay it out and, you know, do it all on Microsoft Word. I don't have it in front of me, but there are books out there. Let's see, one is called Aiming at Amazon.
Aiming at Amazon?
Uh-huh, that's another excellent book that I used when I was self-publishing, and I forget the name of the author, but he wrote a second book called Perfect Pages, which takes you step-by-step through the process of laying out your book in Microsoft Word, which I refer to when I'm doing my layouts.
I can see where, you know, the normal format of, say, writing in Microsoft Word on an 8.5 by 11 sheet with 1-inch margins would not necessarily translate into, you know, the pages of a book which is 5 by 7 or
right. Something that's like right, that. Exactly right. You have to adjust the settings appropriately to shrink down the size of the pages. But it's honestly, it's much easier than trying to learn another more advanced program. Like PageMaker or some of those others, since most people already know how to use Microsoft Word, and it's Microsoft Word has reached the stage now where, I mean, it's not very difficult to lay out a book utilizing it.
What would you say is the single most difficult part of taking a book from first idea to completion?
Well, I guess one thing, of course, is motivation and avoiding distractions. That's one reason I carry a notebook with me everywhere. It's easy to have other things crowd in and push you away from doing this all-important project of writing your book. So staying on target, you know, is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And
one thing in that vein I heard at one point was someone said, staying off of the internet while you're writing.
Exactly. You have to make this the most important thing in your life. It really does have to do everything else, maybe with the exception of your family. But, you know, you have to forego, in my opinion, forego your favorite television shows, forego, in some cases, movies. You have to really take this seriously because you know, this is your legacy. This is, I think, you know, something that needs to be done. It's your mission. Once you realize that you were going to write a book, I think you got to put all of the things aside and focus on writing the book.
So in some ways, actually writing the book is the most difficult part. And then the other things are difficult as well, but can be you can give them lots of good help, I take it, with your book?
Oh, yes. I've kind of guided them through the steps all the way. And self-publishing, I show them how to do that, and how to become a publisher themselves, and how to register with the city, and get in touch with Lightning Source, and how to use that. So, and in order to work with Lightning Source as the printer, you have to be a publisher. So you have to establish that title before you can work with them. That's another reason to be a publisher. But then book promoting, too, is the third section of the book, which I go into with some detail. And, you know, many people go into a book thinking, well, once I write the book, that's it, you know, with little knowledge of what happens afterwards, you know, that you should be thinking of promoting the book at the same time think about writing the book. It should be with you all the time, you know. So you can put, as you write, you know, you want to put, come up with a good title that attracts people to read it, and catchy section titles and chapter titles, and put in information that, of course, people will be excited about reading. So,
using the titles of their chapters sort of as a promotional tool then.
Exactly, yeah, because eventually, in my case, I turn those chapters or portions of chapters into blog articles quite often. So you'll be thinking about that, you know, how can I, as you go along, this chapter or this paragraph would be, you know, something I could plug in as a article somewhere, or, so that's the type of thing you want to bear in mind as you go along. And then people get tripped up, I think, because they don't realize the extent that one really needs to go to get your book out there before the public. I mean, what I recommend is, at minimum, four things people should do to promote their books. And number one is to start a blog. Of course, that's, this day and age, is not very difficult to do. Anyone can go to blogger.com and be writing a blog in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very simple to do, very easy to start promoting your book and get people thinking about it and interacting with the potential readers. The second thing I recommend is YouTube. Of course, the internet sensation, and millions of people post videos there every day, and other millions watch them all the time. I always think back, this was kind of a hurdle for me. I was a little nervous about doing it. I think people, me too, want things to be perfect before, you know, you display them to the public. But in the case of YouTube, you'll never have a perfect video. You have to just kind of go with what you got sometime. And people respect the fact that you're trying to teach them something or show them something of useful value. And the first time, I remember that my first video, I had my 11-year-old son film me. I was over at a wash, and I was going to sit by the wash and produce this video. And I had typed out the script. It was just a one page, and I told him to hold the script beside the video, and I would just read it, and it would look like I was talking naturally. Well, he said, you know, surely this is not going to work. People will know you're reading. I said, no, just hold the script. It'll work. And don't call me Shirley. And it was a little stilted, but, you know, you have to start somewhere and get better with each one. And so it came out okay, but it wasn't that great. Now I use different techniques, such as, you know, just memorize the main points and talk more naturally without having to try to memorize all the words, but or read it, you know, so it comes out a little more fluently.
That sounds a lot like a public speaking class I took when I was in high school.
Yeah, that's right. I used to belong to Toastmasters, and that's what we would use, too, just memorize the main points. And
just have a little index card that just has, you know, written out just the main points, but not so much, you know, word for word what you're talking about.
Uh-huh. Were you nervous before you started?
I've always been nervous.
I think everybody is. You know, they say it's the second most fear-inducing thing for people after death.
Yeah. Maybe even more so than maybe death. More
so. That's true. And so with YouTube, you know, you have in the back of your mind these millions of people will be watching you, so you think, I have to be intimidated.
But right.
The more you make, and I've made, you know, 15 videos now, and it's just a matter of taking the time to sit down and crank them out.
It does seem to get easier as you go.
Yes, the more you do, the better you get, just like public speaking.
Right.
So that was the second thing for promotion. The third thing is radio, which I like, is I think because it's a perfect medium for authors. Since radio hosts have time to fill and authors have something to talk about, it's like a match made in heaven. So I recommend that. And fourth, I highly recommend doing speeches to organizations and associations. You know, every week they need a new speaker, and if you've got a book, an interesting topic, more than likely they would be interested in having you speak to them. And I find it's a great way to sell books right on the spot there. I don't know why, but people get excited about, you know, buying your book when they see you like that in person, and I've sold many a book that way.
So are you doing any regular public speaking now?
Yeah, as they come up, you know, I spoke just a few weeks ago to my neighborhood association. They have a meeting every 3 months, and I just asked if they'd be interested in hearing me talk about my book, and they said, yeah, that'd be great. So I popped up and did it.
There you go. And there's probably lots of organizations in everyone's town where they would be looking for speakers, and you could go and talk about your book.
Very much so. Rotary Club, Optimist Club, Women's Business Women's Associations. Just look on the internet, you know, and you can get a pretty good list of people who would love to have you speak.
Do you recommend talking to your local Chamber of Commerce or anything like that?
I haven't done that, but that's a, you know, that's a...
I just thought of a good idea. Put it in your next book.
I'm going to write that down, Richie. Chamber of Commerce, yeah, that's a good idea. Makes sense, you know.
As a resource, perhaps, for local organizations.
Uh-huh.
What other methods would you say getting your book out there? What other ways can we do it?
Well, of course, internet is big, as I mentioned. I think most people use the internet, but I really encourage them to get outside the internet. Believe it or not, there are people who are not on the internet, and like we are, perhaps. But that's why you have to reach them through radio and through speeches and outside things like that. But of course, you know, there's the big gorilla in the room is the internet. And so one big place to promote is on Amazon. And what I say in my book is that you want to create like a spider web. In other words, a page, author your book page that is so good that people, when they arrive at your book page, you know, they'll be enticed and trapped and taken in, so they'll want to buy your book. And how you do this is, you want to get good reviews, of course, of your book. People may not believe what you say about your book, but they will believe what other people say, particularly people that are Amazon, what do they call it? People who read a lot of books on Amazon get certain titles, you know, like top 100 reviewer or top 50 reviewer, top 10 reviewer. That means, you know, they've read a lot of books and reviewed them. So you want to get those kind of people to review your book because of the credibility they bring with them. And what I do is you can access the list of, you know, people who write a lot of reviews. And they start with the person who wrote the most reviews, you know, many a day, you know, 10 or 20 a day, and they go down from there. So what I would do, and what I recommend too in my book, is to go to each person on that list, maybe the first 100 or 200, or however much patience you have or desire, and you have to look at their profile to determine what type of books they like to read, because they'll tell you. And they'll tell you whether or not they would like you to send books. So the first thing to do is find out if they like to read your type of book and if they're doing reviews right now. And if so, send them an email and ask them if they would like to review your book. And many times they will say yes. Sometimes they won't respond. Other times they'll say no, but it's well worth the effort to do that. And on top of that, it's good to get, you know, colleagues, people who are in the profession, like people who are in a profession related to your book, that is. So in my first book, I tried to get several people, and finally I got another relatively famous author who wrote books about real estate investing. And his name was Fixer J. DeSima. He'd written several books himself. So I sent him an email asking him if he would mind, you know, writing a blurb for my book, and he graciously said yes, and it now appears on the front cover of my first book, Fix Them Up, Rent Them Out. And for this most recent book, there was a fellow I'd known for some time named Joe Saba, who was kind of like the king of promoting things on the radio. And I had spoken to him on the telephone a couple of times, and I even went to one of his seminars in Denver, where he lives. And I asked him to write a blurb for me, and he graciously agreed to, and I put that on the front cover of my new book. So that's one good way to get, as I mentioned on Amazon, get people to write
reviews of the book and blurbs.
And blurbs for your covers of your book, too.
And then, so that's kind of like a nice way to network and find help from others to make your product even more accessible and interesting to people.
Very true. Yeah, that's a good way to connect with other people who probably have already been down the same path that we would like to go down ourselves. And in the case of Joe Saba, he read my book too, of course, before he reviewed it and was giving me very favorable comments. But getting back to Amazon, then some other things you can do also to really promote your book there is to write reviews of other books that are similar. I encourage people not to trash other books just because they're in the same category as yours, but just write a fair review. Most of them, you know, you might, I do write favorable reviews saying, you know, they make good points about such and such. And then you can create lists of favorite books that people can access, and those types of things can help promote you on Amazon. And then there's another way that I use to promote my books through an article writing company online. It's called ezinearticles.com, and you can write articles, post them on this site, and then other people come to the site and they have an interest in your topic, and they can repost the article on their blogs or on e-zines, or, you know, they'll pick them up and distribute them even further, so you become better known yet. And there's many other ways, such as StumbleUpon, you're probably aware of, where you can refer interesting sites to other people, thousands of other people, and you can recommend your own blog articles on StumbleUpon. And, of course, Facebook, all those types of things.
Wonderful. And I'm sure anyone that is an author that is tuning in right now is just overjoyed because they are getting so many wonderful tidbits about how to pursue their dream. And thank you for sharing that, Terry.
My pleasure.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about your other books and also just sort of what actually led you to want to be an author?
Well, you know, it all started kind of in connection with the 9/11 attacks on the World Trade Center. You know, everything was going along well for me. I had a nice 40-hour week job and with the state of Arizona. And when these attacks occurred, my job became kind of shaky because a lot of our money was based on grants to do studies, grants from the federal government. And this money was shifted over to the war in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan. Hmm. So so my hours were sort of cut in half. Suddenly, you know, and I remember being in a kind of a state of shock that what happened? And my wife and I were talking and that we had to find some other source of income that would stabilize us, you know, in cases like this where my job became shaky and I lost money from that or when I wasn't fully funded. So, you know, I decided to, having read a book earlier in my life about real estate investing, to try this thing, buying fixer-upper houses and turning into rental properties, and my wife thought it was a good idea too, so that's what we did. We found a property and bought it and spent lots of time on it, which was really challenging for us because we were both working at the time and we had to work evenings and weekends primarily. But I like to say we worked like dogs, we ate like hogs, and we slept like logs. And we finally got it together and found a renter, and that increased our monthly income. And then we kept doing it again and again with several other houses. And so because of the success of our business, I decided to write a book about it to share my experience and knowledge with others so that they perhaps could follow my footsteps and establish a similar business. So in 2007, that's what I did. I wrote Fix Them Up, Rent Them Out. And I guess it kind of hit a nerve because sales were pretty good. They just, even today, they're still selling quite well. Still my best-selling book.
And that was pretty close to the economic downturn.
Yes, that's true. Shortly after I wrote 2008, I think it started turning down.
But I've heard that even within the economic downturn in the housing industry, you've got a great opportunity there to buy homes cheaply.
Yes, it's an incredible opportunity. We'll never see anything like this again. If you have money, you can get houses. We're looking at houses in my neighborhood for $50,000, and we're planning to buy another one soon. I mean, it's a tremendous opportunity to buy now because we know the prices can only go one way.
When they're this low.
Yes, they're going to increase quite a bit in the future. So it's a pretty good opportunity to buy if you want to get started in this business right now. But I know people are a little uncertain about it because their jobs are shaky and, you know, nobody knows what's going to happen with the economy. Although I think, in my personal opinion, it's getting stronger now and we'll be back on track, hopefully, in the next year or two.
It does seem that way.
Hopefully so.
Thank goodness. Go ahead.
Oh, that was one book. Then I decided to write a second book a couple years later entitled Carve Out Your Niche. And then the subtitle was, Never Sell Your House. The subtitle was Turn Your Home Into a Rental Property.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an e-book that I wrote. And
no physical copies of it?
Nope. It's available through my blog. But
okay.
That's the second one. And finally, as I mentioned, my third book I just published August of last year, Carve Out Your Niche, to describe sort of the process I went through in writing and promoting those first two books.
Well, I think it's great. You've got a lot of life experience to share with others, and you're putting that to work for you, too.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to do, to share my experiences and try to help out others a little bit. Hopefully that'll fall into the right hands and be useful for people.
What was it like to win the Best Books Award as a finalist there? From USA Book News.
Well, it felt pretty good. You know, you often wonder how people will respond to your book, but when you win an award like that, you realize, well, maybe I'm on the right track, you know. At least some people think it's a pretty good book. So,
you've got some glowing reviews from Midwest Book Review and the Top 50 Amazon Reviewer, the Downright Inspiring and Invaluable, which, I mean, I think for a book that is talking about how to do something, those kind of reviews are exactly what you need.
Sure, I'm very grateful for those, you know, and again, it's extremely encouraging, you know, it makes me think that I'm on the right track and I got to keep just plugging away to get to promote this book and get it out there so people will be able to benefit from it.
And I think you're doing the right thing. You're coming on here, and obviously you know many other ways to help promote your book aside from the internet, which has got to be working good for you too then.
It's worked pretty well. You know, the things I mentioned in the book are all things that I've done in, you know, myself, and I realize that they've worked for me, and I think they can work for almost anybody. And the good thing is it's not that expensive. You know, it's I really don't believe that you need to hire a promotion company or pay a lot of money to do this, because there's so many free or relatively inexpensive opportunities to promote your own book by yourself.
As I read through your blog here on carveoutyourniche.blogspot.com, you talk a lot about some things that I think probably really inspirational for people who maybe suffer from writer's block. Or some general advice for life. Here's one question. Are you big enough to pay it forward? Can you explain that question?
Well, that blog article is really based on a book I had read not too long ago called Pay It Forward. And it's an incredibly inspirational book, you know, about this boy who wants to change the world. He receives an assignment from his teacher, change the world in some way,
mm-hmm.
and decide to help three people improve their lives in some way, and then those three people help three more people, and it'll kind of spread out like that. And so in connection with my book, you know, I feel like that's what we do when we write a book. We are reaching out to help other people, you know, we're sharing our lives with them, and I think there's a reason we have this motivation or this little voice telling us to write a book, that it's something bigger than us. It's something that can help other people. And if we don't do it, you know, it's we all lose, you know. So
don't deprive the world of your light.
Exactly. Exactly right. Yeah, that's the type of thing that I believe is true. So you have to follow that flash of intuition that, you know, the book needs to be written, and you're the only one that can write it, so, you know, get with it so you can share it with the rest of us.
You say, the next down the way here on the blog, you say, carve out your niche and build a stairway to heaven.
Yeah, see, once again, I'm tying into kind of things that are going on in society. It was the 50th anniversary, I think, of the song Stairway to Heaven, the famous song that was written in the late 60s, I think. And so I commented on how that song was sort of inspirational to me in terms of the mysteries of life, and you know, there's more going on behind the scenes than we realize on the surface. And that, again, you know, when we share our lives and our experience and wisdom with others, we are kind of building our stairway to heaven building good karma and helping others to reach their own goals and aspirations.
Do you ever find writing a book could be a selfish rather than a selfless activity?
Not from my perspective. I mean, my view is that people write to share something that's inside of them. And that in the act of sharing, that's kind of a selfless act. And mm-hmm. I mean, maybe there are ulterior motives. Certainly, there are benefits to be received from writing a book, such as, you know, notoriety and establishing credentials for yourself, mm-hmm. and, you know, creating a new stream of income.
But those rewards would be deserved.
I would think so too. Yeah, you know, they're just part of the package when you. When you share and do what you should be doing by writing your book, it's part of the package of things you receive in return.
From the titles of these blogs, I think you have a lot of wisdom here. Here's another one. Do the thing you fear to do. How Linda Emery met Bruce Lee.
Yeah, that's. I just read a book about Bruce Lee, and it was really intriguing to me that this 17-year-old girl, she was in class one day, and Bruce Lee came into her class as a guest speaker in high school to talk about Chinese culture. And so she saw him and kind of fell in love with him. You know, he seemed so handsome and authoritative on what he was talking about. It was very intriguing for her. And then shortly thereafter, Bruce Lee opened up a karate studio in San Francisco. And Linda went over and signed up for karate lessons. Well, this was like in 1964. So at that time, you know,
not a very common thing to
do. Women were not exactly signing up for karate. So I imagine she was the only one in class. You know, it took a lot of courage for her to sign up for that class, primarily, you know, to get to know Bruce better. But, you know, I admired the fact that she was able to get up the courage to do that and do the thing that she feared to do, you know, face ridicule, but still she did it.
How important do you think that is for a writer?
You know, that's a good question, because when you're writing a book, you often wonder, am I really doing something good? Is this, what am I doing? You know, is this going to be worth anything when I'm done? You get these, question your own abilities and things, and we all go through these periods of self-doubt. So I think we have to do things to pump ourselves up and realize that, yes, it is something of value, and yes, we do have to write this, and people will read it, and it'll be useful to them.
Hmm.
So self-doubt's, I think, a part of every writer's life that has to be dealt with.
What are some good ways of dealing with your fears and self-doubts?
I think by reading inspirational books is one way. I read books by Wayne Dyer and others, Marianne Williamson, good author, books that inspire you and help you to think positive thoughts and
sort of see how others have struggled with similar things.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Everybody seems to have to follow a similar path. Can be lonely, but when we realize others have gone down that path before us, it's easier, you know, to get our own courage up and keep marching on.
You say the next one is do the opposite of everyone else.
Yes, that relates to when I was at the university. You know, a common thing was for people to get jobs, you know, mopping floors or working in the kitchen or anything to help pay for the tuition and keep you in school. And I mopped a few floors too, of course, and got jobs like that. But I decided that I wanted to try something different. And the summer prior to entering the university, I had taken a class in auto mechanics, and so I started a business tuning up cars, and I got a lot of business. On weekends, every weekend, I'd be tuning up people's cars for $25 or something, you know, some low price. And so I made money on the site doing that. And my roommate and I, John, talked about another business that we wanted to start, singing telegrams. So he and I started a business doing that also, where we dress up like Coneheads or Wolfmen or unknown comedians. And we'd go and do singing telegrams for money, you know, to make extra money too. So those were two things. And the gist of it is that, you know, by going on a path and not following the path of everybody else in terms of jobs, that you not only have fun doing what you're doing, but you learn more, you know, you learn business principles and learn how to operate a business and how to make money and that type of thing, lessons that would be useful as you go on in life.
Have you always been an entrepreneur?
off and on. You know, I was in college. I was a volunteer in the Peace Corps in Honduras, where I originally started thinking about writing a book. But and then it sprung up again. You know, when 2001, when my job started getting shaky there, and I thought again, once again, I thought it might be a good time to become an entrepreneur again. So off and on throughout my life, I've had spurts of entrepreneurship, and now I retired from my job in 2010, and so I've been strictly focusing on my businesses now, my book writing and my fixer-upper business.
Right. And now it's your whole life, I guess.
Yes, it is. And I tell you what, my stress level is a lot less than when I was working a 8-to-5 job. It had, things, good points, but in general, I always kind of felt trapped inside the four walls of an office. I much prefer to have the flexibility of writing books or, fixing up a house and that type of thing, where I'm more independent and can kind of be master of my own fate.
Right. It's interesting you said that. I just recently read Genome, which was the story of the human genome, written by a journalist whose name eludes me at the moment. But one of the points that was in that book was that a lot of people's their lives are actually, the length of their life is largely determined by the amount of power and authority they have over their lives and in their job, even more so than lifestyle choices and other things that we would naturally assume would affect, your health.
Yeah.
But the number one thing is actually how happy we are with our job.
You know, I really believe that too, Richie, because I've read myself that, you pay a price for following your dream, of course, but you also pay a price for staying where you are. And that price is usually in depression. And it turns out in the United States of America, we pay like $30 billion a year to treat clinical depression. And I think, like you're saying, if people were happy with their jobs, if they're doing what they enjoy doing or feel like is productive, then they wouldn't have time to be depressed. You know, they'd be so busy moving ahead and forward their lives that it'd be a different world for them.
The book is Carve Out Your Niche. And the subtitle of that is Live Your Passion, Write Your Book, and Help Others Change Their World. Check out carveyourniche.blogspot.com to learn more about the author Terry Wayne Sprouse and his great contributions here in the form of three books. He's got tons of wisdom to share. And thank you again, Terry, for joining us today.
Thank you, Richie. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Likewise. Can you tell our listeners again just the best ways to get in touch with you or find out more about you or your books?
Yes, the easiest way is go to my blog at carveoutyourniche.com. There you'll find, my articles. You can connect to my book. You can send me an email or ask questions. I'll be glad to respond. And that's where everything happens.
Thank you so much for sharing with us today, Terry. And come back the next time you write a book.
I'll do that. Thank you, Richie.
All right. Have a great night.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks for tuning in to Authors First on the Artists First Radio Network. Stay tuned.